Hey friends, software is everywhere, putting us devs on the front lines of innovation, improving people's lives, shipping new and better features, all while moving faster than ever before, which is where our friends at Raygun can help. Their powerful error and performance monitoring tools make it easy to get all the diagnostics you care about for your team's web and mobile apps. When there's an issue, it shows you exactly what's going on, who's being impacted, and how to fix the root cause, down to the specific line of code. See how your users are experiencing your website or app in real time and ship better code faster with confidence, knowing that Raygun will alert you to any new issues or regressions. Start a free 14-day trial of Raygun today and try it for yourself. It only takes a few lines of code, and their simple usage-based plans start at $4 a month, a small price to pay to get your team and users to love you. Visit Raygun.com. Try it out. Thank me later. Hi, I'm Scott Hanselman. This is another episode of Hansel Minutes. Today, we're chatting with Lisi Hawke. She's a holistic tester, a quality enabler, and an agile experimenter on the internet. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Scott.
Thanks for hanging out. So you've been doing continuous testing, cross-functional product teamwork for a number of years now, and you also have a popular blog and you're active on the internet. Do you consider yourself a tester? That is a full-time thing now. We've had a couple of testers on the show before. Are you a developer or a tester?
That's a really good question. And I think that's a question that's following around in the community. So I personally consider myself a tester because that's how I identified myself with first. But I actually don't really care. As long as I can do what I can do and contribute in the ways that where I thrive, then you can also call me a quality engineer, what is currently my title, for example, or a developer or whatever. So that is totally fine with me. But I personally would name myself as a tester.
Mm-hmm. I've had a few testers on the show before, and I've brought up this idea that maybe the term tester has been not respected in the community, and like testers as second-class citizens. Some testers agreed with me and others felt that maybe that was old thinking. What do you think?
I talked a lot with people whenever we talk about testing and quality or if I join in a team. Most people actually never had the experience to work with a dedicated testing and quality person, however they title themselves. So usually I have a lot of these kind of conversations. I found for myself there's no shortcut. So no matter which kind of titles or words we use, we always need to make sure we have a shared understanding of what they actually mean. I've met so many misconceptions around each title, so be it tester or be it especially quality assurance, something that I actually don't identify with, because that's in my head, like the more like old school gatekeeping, quality policy job that I'm not doing. So in the end, it's about talking with each other and doing good work together. So I don't think there's a shortcut around that conversation.
So if we're on a team together, you and I, and I'm a dev and you're the quality enabler, the quality engineer, like how do we work together? What if I'm a dev that I'm throwing you code as fast as I can, but it keeps coming up with the same silly bugs? Do you come back to me and try to figure out a way to make me write better code, or how are you interacting with me?
I would try to meet your needs and meet you where you are. And that really depends on the person, the experiences this person made already. But if I would jump to my ideal version, where I would like to be us in the future then together, is highly collaborative. I prefer definitely synchronous collaboration. So I would try to get us to pairing, looking at things together, working together from the very start. Usually when we first met, we can't just jump right there. That's rare. That's really rare. So usually it will look like a series of iterations. Maybe we start working asynchronous at first. So I'll try to be very fast in my feedback there, very proactive, let's say. But I'll also try to lure you into, let's look at things together. Can I show you what I've just found? I have a few questions. Can we brainstorm about something? Can I have a look at how would that look like? Can we just change it right away. We're already on it, right? So let's get to work collaboratively.
You know, when I was developing 15, 20 years ago, when XP or extreme programming was starting out, and I heard the term pair programming the most, when I look at my now 30-year career, I think the most fondly about two people and one keyboard. I just, it was such fun. I know the pandemic has changed stuff, but I still love screen sharing and hanging out with people.
Right.
But do folks still do that? Is that a lost art?
I hope not. So, I mean, I rarely met programmers instantly pairing while they program. Unfortunately, I've never came across such a situation where people already did that. Usually, it came then with me and the concepts that I have of pairing and working together. So it started then usually with pair testing, because that's where people first accepted me. Okay, that's sort of your thing, right? So, okay, maybe we can learn from each other there. And then as we moved earlier and earlier in the process, obviously we also reached, let's just implement it together, right? Or even before implementation, let's think together. What else is there? What have we missed before we even start? But it usually came from the end, basically. But that's not where I want to stop.
Mm-hmm. But you feel strongly that pairing is an important thing. Like if you came to a company and their culture did not support any kind of pair programming, you think that's a problem?
I think there are many ways how we can do good work. Yet it's definitely the best one that I've found so far in my own bubble, in my own experience. Not the best in the sense of the best collaboration method. I think actually ensembling is even better, because then we have more brains in, more perspectives, more instant feedback even. But pairing is already a great step towards that. So, for example, my current job, I joined the company 8 months ago. I exactly had that situation. Nobody even could relate to the word pairing because it was so foreign as a concept.
And did you change that? Did you? Was that the thing that you brought to the team? Was like, hey, I think we got a better way to do things.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Obviously, we're dealing with humans. Each human is different. Everybody needs time to change, to decide for themselves what they want to try out and whatnot. Everybody has a sweet spot, basically, where you can lure them to try something new, something they haven't done before. Mm-hmm. But they need to feel safe to do so, right? So what we did in our team right now is I mostly worked with 5 developers. And usually I have an early adopter who was quite quickly convinced, oh, that could be interesting. Let's try this out. And, oh, actually a benefit from that. And maybe I have quicker answer to my feedback. Maybe I don't have to change to that next story and start working on that, but I can actually finish the other one. Let's just do it together. And then it grew from there. So with that person, I'm now way farther on that journey of pairing, working together. But obviously there's also the other people. So I will always have one who's maybe a bit more hesitant due to whatever reasons, but usually people have good reasons because of their past experiences and whatnot. But also here, I already see transitioning. It's just that their big step might look completely different than that early adopter step.
Mm-hmm. That term that you used, ensembling, I had Woody Zuhl, who was the discoverer, he calls himself, of mob programming. But I understand that the word mob usually means a disorderly or kind of a crazy group of people with no particular direction. Well, an ensemble is quite organized and has a plan. So is ensemble the new mob programming?
In a lot of communities, it is, or it is becoming to. Maybe in the future, we will have even better words to describe that approach. The main reason why I personally switched my language from mobbing to ensembling is actually to include more people. I learned over the years, while I was preaching about mob programming and mob testing, mob everything, basically, that this term induced even anxiety and like a lot of trauma with people. So I felt, okay, that's definitely not the goal. It's so contrary to the approach where we really work together very, very closely, where we specifically want to have those diverse perspectives. So then two people came up with a new term, which is ensemble. I'm pretty sure I don't do their names justice, but I'm going to try. So Marit Pyrjevi and then it's you. They suggested that term ensemble. And I felt, okay, at first, okay, that's very different. Let's see. But actually the meaning, the connotation of an ensemble, for example, in theater, in music, and so on, represents that concept a lot better without those negative connotations. And or even just the French translation, which would be together, right? Yeah. Yes, let's do that together. And I felt like, yeah, that's way better than the former term. So I started to switch all my resources and writings and talks to that new term. But it's the same concept, working effectively together.
Yeah, sometimes people will tease me when I come up with a better word or a new word. But I remember in the 90s, I would sit down with object-oriented programming with a thesaurus looking for better words. And like, why are you spending so much time looking for better words? Because when you find the one word, you're like, oh, that's a great word, you know? Like, when I think of a mob, I think of a group of people running in a certain direction, but they are usually causing trouble, which is maybe not what we're trying to. We're trying to cause quality, but an ensemble or an orchestra. Like, I love the way that Kubernetes has all these wonderful, you know, terms, and there's like orchestrating, and you know, those are words that are very descriptive. So I like that, ensembling. Okay, so pair programming, two people working to a goal, ensembling. How did you introduce that to work? To your job?
I try to go different ways. I started out introducing it with quite a common variant, and I use the same one still for conference sessions, for example, for workshops, which is the form that you have one person at the keyboard who's usually called the driver, basically taking instructions from a navigator who can think ahead, can think of, okay, what the big picture, what's the next big goal we want to achieve. And both of them are supported by the rest of the ensemble, who can observe, who can take notes, who can basically also ask questions, give input of where to go next. That is quite a nice concept to start with, especially if people don't know each other yet or have never really worked together in a coordinated way. If you have loud voices, like very dominant people trying to, maybe not intentionally, but trying to basically overtake the conversation. This is a nice way to include really everyone and hear all voices. It's definitely not the only form that can take. So nowadays, I also try in real work situations, rather try not to even mention that we're ensembling, or also same with pairing, basically, but just to lure them into that setting and try to, well, more or less sneakily set the stage to still have effective collaboration just happening so that they can just experience it for themselves first before we talk about theory.
Mm-hmm. Hey friends, I want to take a second and thank our sponsor, Zencastr. You know that I've been doing Hansel Minutes now for over 850 episodes. And in the old days, I would have a guest manually install Audacity and they would FTP their WAV file to me. And it was a mess. But for the last several hundred episodes, I've been using Zencastr. It's an all-in-one podcast production suite. It runs entirely in the browser. It's got now video, HD video. It's got built-in voice chat. I do footnotes. I've got a soundboard for live editing. It's absolutely brilliant. And it also uploads to my cloud. The guest shows up, they go to a URL, they record, and then the next thing you know, in my Dropbox or my cloud storage, a file appears. It's absolutely brilliant, and they've even now got automatic transcripts. And they are now sponsoring this show, and you can go to Zencastr, Zencastr.com/pricing, and use my code HanselMinutes. And you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experience that I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story with Zencastr. When is the team too large? And when is it, like you say, loud voices? Sometimes we say that and we mean that there's a negative connotation. But other times it might just mean that the person who's the loudest, maybe the most enthusiastic, and maybe the one who's most qualified. How do you say, you know, it looks like, you know, Lisi really knows this problem. We don't need this ensemble right now. Let's let them go off and come back together. Because you don't want to waste 10 people's time versus we do need everyone here. You know what I mean? Like, how do you deal with that value? Because if that person, I don't like the term 10x developer, but you have literally 10 developers in a room, And then one or two could maybe split off and run because they obviously are vibing. How do you reconcile that?
I'd say it's a great opportunity, actually, to share that knowledge.
Oh.
So we want to have those other 10 developers also be able to do that, right? Not only for the long term, but even for like next week. That makes a huge difference if we enable the people and set the system in the sense that we all have the access and the opportunity to learn those things that those, yeah, let's say, very knowledgeable expert people already have. It's a multiplier.
Okay. But then that's new skills, though. That person may have that information, be ready to, they want to just slap the keyboard. They're ready to make some code. They're going to need to switch another part of their brain on and teach at the same time. And they may be just running. I just want to get this out of my brain. That's going to be a new skill for them.
It is. So I would not force anyone to do it. That's first of all. So if someone is really right now not in the headspace, not in the mood, not willing to give this a try, that's not a good place to start for anyone of them, right? But if they are willing to give this a try and to also transfer their knowledge, this is a wonderful opportunity for everyone. But again, it's not about forcing people into a situation they don't want to be in. I've never seen that work.
Yeah. You used a term there just now called headspace. I've been using that a lot lately. I love that word because if I'm meeting with someone and we're getting ready to have our meeting and I just have a sense, like a vibe that maybe this isn't the time. Usually for me, that's Monday mornings. And I'll say, is this a good time to talk about Project X or are you in a good headspace? And maybe 10% of the time, people will say, you know, I'm not. Can we do this Thursday afternoon? And that's totally fine. I would much rather work with someone who's in the right place. So maybe they do go off and they write the code and then they bring the whole team back and then they present and they teach the ensemble. But it's hard to both be heads down super programmer and heads down super teacher at the same time, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I do think also teaching, as you said, is a different skill. You need to train it as well. You need to practice. Collaborating in an ensemble fashion is a skill in itself. Yet I've seen personally so many benefits to take from that in all kinds of group situations. And I've also seen people grow a lot in those situations. So it's even not only like the instant or the immediate thing that we want to do and want to tackle that can also be having a lot better outcome, but also like each of those persons instantly grow and like all of them at the same time, which is like in different manners. Yes. But that's where I see this amplifying effect happening heavily.
Do you have any trouble with management saying, hey, there's 10 people in a room here. What are you doing? You need to be working off separately. You're wasting time. You're wasting money. You're wasting hours.
I was afraid so, actually, when I started out, but it never happened. Management was always like cheering on, like, yeah, awesome. You're trying something. That's great. People together. So it was usually other developers, mostly, like, I think, being skeptic and like, nah, I don't know. How's it going to be productive? How's it going to end up? Mm-hmm. We still will need code review and all that stuff. And like, let's just give it a try.
But you're not saying that we should be in a room 8 hours a day collectively, right? You're doing this in bursts. These are sprints, moments, an hour here, 2 hours there, where we come together, right? In a week, how often are you doing an ensemble versus coding with your head down by yourself?
I am yet to see a place where I can do it most of the time. I would love to try that out once. Yet in the best of times, we had like maybe 60% of the week working together in an ensemble. That was already, I think, the maximum we achieved.
Wow.
And nowadays, with my different team, different setup, different contacts, I'll make use of any chance. It's not most of the time or of the day at all. When I get a day in where I just pair an ensemble, that is my lucky, happy space. But it's not everyday reality. Mm-hmm. So I'll try to take and seize opportunities as I get them. Mm-hmm.
So for folks that are listening might be thinking, I don't like this idea. This makes me uncomfortable. I know that you're a big fan of getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. And you've actually set up a series of personal challenges for yourself where you try to grow your career and grow yourself personally by going outside your comfort zone. When did you decide that that was a good idea to really get uncomfortable?
I think that was back in 2016. I was at a conference. That conference back then had a really inspiring opening keynote that talked all about being brave and getting out of your comfort zone and do something scary every day. That really followed me around, and it led to a great conversation over lunch the next day with the person that I've met in a workshop there. And it so happened that this person, Toyo Mamuji, shared my fear, like the biggest thing that is scaring me, which is public speaking. We back then felt we share that. Well, but how about getting out of our comfort zones? And back then, he seized the moment, basically, and he reached over the table and, you know, extended his hand and said, like, okay, let's make a deal. Let's try this. If you're going to submit for next year's conference, I'm going to have to do that too. But if I submit, you have to submit too. I was at first like, oh my gosh, putting me on the spot. I usually would have never agreed to such a deal. I'm not that type of person. But it was the atmosphere, that whole inspiring keynote in my head, everything. And I said, like, okay, let's just do it. Let's just take that leap. And I shook his hand, and our learning partnership basically started, including our first common challenge, getting into public speaking, becoming conference speakers, returning to the same conference the following year. And he instantly made it public in front of the whole audience and everything. I felt like, okay, there's no way I'm getting out of this. And I don't want to disappoint my accountability partners. It really, really works for me well. We both had also similar interests, similar mindset, but also enough differences to be really inspiring for each other. And we actually made it. We managed to become speakers, to return to the same conference back in 2017. And I was so successful. We felt like, why stop here, right? It worked so well. What's the next thing we could do to get out of our comfort zones? And well, off we went.
And I'm looking at your blog here, and I click on speaking engagements, and it all starts, as you said, in, you know, late 2016, early 2017. And I must say, I'm looking at 60 or 70 speaking engagements in the last 5 years. That's a little bit more than, you know, maybe I should give a talk or two. So you say that you were horribly afraid of this, so you leaned into it. Did you then become addicted to public speaking?
Well, not to the fact of public speaking itself, but to the fact that it's an amazing entry ticket to get to know amazing people, to get to a lot of conferences, to have a lot of opportunities through that network that you're building. That was so inspiring that I felt, no, I'm not going to stop. I mean, I'm still not the most comfortable on stage. It got a lot better with practice, obviously. And I know how to cope with that situation. I'm still learning. It's an ongoing journey. But I've seen a lot more situations that I had to deal with. So it really grew in that manner. But it's still, my main motivation here is still to be able to get to those events. And then also to give back, because I received a lot from community, and that's another way how I can give back and do my part to pay it forward.
That's cool. And then your personal challenge for 2019 was to become more, you call it code confident. What does that mean, code confident for you?
So I am not coming from a background that where you learned basically the computer science basics. I actually had it as a minor in university, but honestly, that wasn't enough. So I'm not coming from a background where I felt already confident once I entered my career with anything tech. I actually never thought I could work in tech. So for me, it was a very lucky, fortunate event that I found tech for myself right after university. Interesting fact, I actually grew up with tech, so it's not that I didn't have the connection, but I was really socialized in a different way. For me, it was like, oh, you know, as a woman, languages. Languages is something for you. Everything else was a bit farer. Now, when I started out, obviously I had to learn as I went. So a long time I was also like the lone tester, the lone person in my role. So not really many people to learn from. I most learned from community, like from people outside. And all that over years grew into like quite some uncertainty. Like, okay, how am I actually doing? Anything what people might label technical, anything code, was highly fascinating for me, but I didn't really know where I stand, what to do. And I realized maybe that's exactly what I need to do, build my confidence that I can figure things out, that I've worked with code over years, but why don't I feel confident? So let's practice that. Let's take that scary step in that year and put myself out there with whatever limited knowledge I had back then, show myself, pair with people again, also on that journey, and grow that confidence deliberately.
That's really cool. It might sound silly, but I feel like I need to do the same thing. You know, I do a lot of talking. I do a lot of coding myself, but my language is C#. I have confidence in C#. But like yesterday, it was my vacation or my weekend. So I was messing around in Python and just realizing like how bad my Python is. Like even now, like English is not your native language and you're just doing an amazing job in a podcast in English fluently. So the parallels are similar. I tried to like write a bunch of code in Python and I found myself on every line, like second guessing, like, I think that's how they do it. Is that the word that they would use? You know? And then I get this analysis paralysis, but then I was thinking, oh, I'll go live. And then I'm like, I don't want everyone to laugh at my bad Python. And that's how we don't learn.
Yeah, exactly. And in my position in the testing quality space, you can be, I know I'm aware not everybody is, but what I really love about this is that you're all over the place. It's a very, very holistic thing. So you can dive into everything, also to depth. I'm a sort of a specialized generalist in that sense, but I can go from UX design to architecture to really deep down in coding to whatever. But obviously, my knowledge is spread very widely then. So that's another point where a lot of, well, insecurities come in because you don't have that. You're not rooted in one deep, deep expertise. Mm-hmm. But when I work, for example, with programming languages, I usually work with 5 at the same time. Mm-hmm. And I always have to switch all the time. So
because you're testing the whole stack, right? So you're doing front end, you're doing back end.
Everything. So I have to also always be able to speak their language, which makes it even more interesting. I mean, for me, it's great because I can dive into everything. I can learn a lot of great stuff. But the confidence part was really getting to me. And now it's a whole different thing. I mean, I still don't know everything. And that's okay. That's the thing. That's okay to not know everything. We can still figure things out. It's totally fine to make mistakes. I'm not the only one on that team, right? But I am a lot more confident now doing those things, asking those questions, maybe also mixing up languages because, right now I was thinking JavaScript and now it's Kotlin. So, let's switch to that. But I think the main part was confidence and that also changed the outside perception. So I changed my perception about myself to perceive myself as technical, as confident. And suddenly, like for the last 2 years, nobody questioned me in that anymore. Mm. Because I also present myself a lot differently now. But before, no matter more what my title was or whatever, even as a principal, I was still questioned it a lot.
Did you have any challenges or did you have any concern about being more public about that? Like I was saying that yesterday I could have gone live on YouTube and written bad Python and people would be like, aha, Hanselman doesn't know what he's talking about. But then at the same time, I'm not fluent in Python. I wonder if you would be afraid that people would use that as an opportunity to go, aha, I caught you, Lisi. You've been faking it for years and you really don't know JavaScript like we thought you did. People who are from, underestimated or underrepresented groups might not want to go out and be public because they're like, people will use that as an opportunity to say, I knew it. I knew you sucked. How do you get past that?
That is a really good question. I am sure I cannot answer it for everyone else.
You're just for yourself.
Yeah, for me, I think I honestly still ask myself that question again and again. The one good validation that I had recently was changing jobs, because I was at my previous company for 6 years. So I really felt like I wondered, is it, you know, does it just work in that bubble? Is it, you know, is it really specific to the context that I thrive there? Could I transfer it to another context? Would it work or not? And especially as I now joined a company where I'm not the most experienced tester. So I have a lot of people from community actually at my same company. It's amazing, but it's also awe-inspiring. There's a lot of big names there where I felt like, okay, now they're going to find out. Definitely going to find out. And it was really good to see that actually it's okay. I still don't have to know everything. I'm not doing so badly. So we can all learn from each other because we all have very different skill sets, and that's okay. So from time to time, having that external validation really helps with that little voice in the head.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for hanging out with me today. This has been really enlightening.
Very welcome. It was a pleasure being here.
All right. We've been chatting with Lisi Hocke. You can check her out at lisihocke.com. We'll put a link in the show notes as well. You can learn all about testing, her speaking engagements, her recommended resources, as well as her personal challenges to become, whether it be more code confident or a better public speaker. She's got a lot to teach us. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and we'll see you again next week.